You can't just kind of do repetitive stuff and learn to get better. You have to challenge your brain and challenge yourself in different ways that are fun and then help you kind of forget you're even practicing. Focus on the present moment. You know, the key to enjoying the game and playing well is to be fully present, right? It's super simple. It's like a childlike state of engagement. So my takeaway is do something you love, find mental health in it, and also improve your game at the same time. So there's all benefits to it.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, John, welcome to the Member Guest Podcast. It's good to have you on. And before we were even starting, I didn't ask you, where do you live? Where are you based out of right now? Are you guys still golfing wherever you are?
No, I'm in New York. So kind of.
Okay. You're on the same season as us, where there's probably a couple local munis still open that you can go and play, but for the majority of courses, they're shut down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they're shut down, but you can tough it out. You know, it's probably cheaper rates, but you know, there's places you can go play if you want to sweater up. It's just fine. I usually do, but you know, a lot of times during this time of year, you get busy with other things too, and so you don't have the space for golf as you did in the summer. You know, but I am going to Florida over Thanksgiving, so I'll be able to play there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's you got to get out of these cold states. I don't know about you guys in New York, but we had kind of our first dusting of snow, maybe.
Oof, already.
I don't know, a little less than a week ago. You know, it's that first snow where it comes and you can like see it and then it goes away the next day. But you're like, oh, yeah, it's winter. It's starting to come now.
Now it's winter. That's the reminder. Where are you at?
We're out of Minneapolis. So both Andy and I know that's how we got connected. So I believe you, you know, is it Andy's mom?
Yeah, I did a writing class with Andy's mom's friend. And so,
got it.
And so she's like, hey, I talked to her and she said you're sure someone really loved to talk to you. And so that's how it all happened. And I sent Andy the book. Actually, he has a copy.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, like, you know, well, not unfortunately, I definitely shouldn't say that, but Andy just had his child. So he's on paternity leave from not only his 9-to-5, but from the podcast as well. So you're kind of stuck with me, but
that's no problem.
I'm sure if you found out or even just talking with Andy's mom, like, you know, obviously golf is a big part of our lives, but an even further extension of that is kind of the mental game, and not only the mental game, but like the, you know, similarities you can draw between the game of golf and life and, you know, all the things that it teaches you, which it sounds like that's the kind of what your book is about, right? So like, I'd love to, one, talk about it, but two, then get your perspective on, you know, how you came up with this, like why you even decided to write a book in the first place. And clearly you've got a love for the game like we do.
Yeah. 100%, man. The book came about really was always an idea I had when I used to live in Los Angeles. I lived there for 10 years. I worked in entertainment for years for HBO and did a bunch of film and television production. And that was like the first part of my career. And I played a lot of golf there because it was great, great weather and you could play at night. And me and good friends of mine, specifically a good friend of mine, Scott Mathis, we used to play a lot. And it's always more fun, as you know, when you have grinders to play with and practice with. And we used to do a lot of fun or unorthodox games. You know, we would hit 5 woods into the Venice Beach, you know, lifeguard towers at night. And we would play night golf in Westchester and, you know, practice at Rancho. And if anybody's lived in L.A., they understand these places that most golfers go to, munis and public places that people go to practice and grind things out. And we used to do all these fun games. And I used to think to myself, you know who would benefit from this? Everybody. Like, this is a great way to practice. And Nick Faldo always used to talk about do things that mentally keep you engaged. You can't just kind of do repetitive stuff and learn to get better. You have to challenge your brain and challenge yourself in different ways that are fun and then help you kind of forget you're even practicing. And you know, golf, when you love golf, you love practice more than you love playing in some way. So it's just, you're always chipping in your backyard or on your rug, you're putting, so this is born out of that love for the game, which is like practicing is so much fun. You can have so much fun with your friends, and then you can enjoy the game without having the pressure of trying to play better. You end up playing better, you know?
Oh, well, 100%. I've got a really good friend at our club here in Minnesota. His name's Jeff Prouser. We all call him Prousey, and he's got this bit. I can't even remember the term that they call it. They call them parlor games, where like after every few holes, he'll just like, and I had never heard of this before, but one of our first times ever playing together, he was like, all right, parlor game, throw a ball down. I'm like, what? He's just throw a ball down. We threw it down and we had to hit like with our, whatever clubs that we had in our hand, we had just like closest to the carts down at the bottom of the hill. Right. Just doing kind of like funny little stuff like that. Just as like little side games all around the course. I think it was just a way for him to make the round a little bit more fun, especially when you're like playing in between, you know, maybe some slower groups in front of you. But that was like the first time I'd ever heard of that concept. And then it kind of became this thing where he started to do it every single time that he played. It'd always be one kind of power game mixed in that became some kind of competition for something fun like that.
It's funny you say that because you are going to love my book then, because I have a story called When Play Is Slow, Play Tennis. And I always say, if you're at a Muni and you're waiting 15 minutes to tee off, just grab a ball and have your buddy go 40 yards away and just chip back and forth with them. You know, just kind of like hit nice chips, let it bounce and land to them, and pick it up and chip back to you, or go out for a, you know, a pass and football, let them throw it to you, you know, chip it to your, to a spot and you'll catch it. And I say that because it's better to keep in motion while you wait. And if this isn't a tour event and you have room and time, practice while you're kind of waiting for these guys to tee off. You know, that happens all the time. And then a lot of times I say in the story, you have that shot, you have a 40-yard chip shot after your tee shot on a short par four, and you kind of go, wow, I had this shot already. So it's funny you say that, because that is, I think, a really, really part of being an amateur golfer is doing the unorthodox things. You don't have to wear pants when it's 90 degrees. You know, you don't have a caddy most of the time. You're going to have to calculate your own yardage. So you might as well kind of get all the edges you can while you're practicing and while you're playing, you know?
I don't know if somebody paid you to say that, because I'm one of those guys that wears pants when it's like 95 or 100
Andy called
degrees.
Me buff. And
Well, and it has less to do with like the actual, you know, the heat or the cold or anything. I just think like pants are more comfortable when I golf. Really? I don't know. I don't like wearing shorts. I mean, I do every now and again, but nowadays all these sport tech pants that you get anyways,
they're nice.
Are so light and comfortable. Like it has nothing to do with the temperature. I would rather wear
that was a metaphor for it doesn't have to be so stringent and rules oriented. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I completely understand. You know? It's just hilarious because I'm like the one guy you talk to that probably still wears pants.
That
when
is
it's
funny
100
because
degrees out.
I'm opposite. I put shorts on like. I wore shorts the other day because it was warm. It's been like 80, 70 something here. Any chance I get to wear shorts, I do. You can't put shorts on me before like October 20th out in the East Coast at least. So I'm a big shorts wearer. I prefer it.
Yeah, I get it. And I, you know, on the topic of kind of just chatting about, you know, mental game, if you will, I've had a lot of folks either at the professional level or, you know, caddies at the professional level. We talk about the mental game, and it seems like in the, you know, call it the sport of professional golf, and I know a lot of this stuff is geared towards amateurs too, but in professional golf, you see a lot more of pros talking about process and mindfulness and trying to have fun and just appreciate the game and kind of let go of all those, you know, trying to be perfect all the time. What is it about the sport of golf that I think unlocking that almost seems to be a superpower or an advantage, where in a lot of other sports, you know, that kind of like repetitive practice and staying in it and grinding is a part of it, but like in golf there's this aspect of letting go and like, you know, not necessarily caring about outcomes. What is it about golf that has this translation that it doesn't seem like it does with any other sport?
Well, I think like a lot of sports, Kobe talks about it a lot too. You can't worry about the outcome when you take a shot either. You know, when you're kicking a penalty kick or taking a free throw, if you worry about the outcome, you probably already missed it. So I think that I think the difference with golf is a lot of those other sports are millisecond to millisecond, split second decisions, muscle memory. You're in and out. You're the hockey and basketball and all of those sports, even baseball to some extent, are quick. You got to make quick decisions when the ball's in play. In golf, you have like, you might have 10 minutes before you hit another shot. You know, you hit the ball and you got to wait for maybe three other guys to hit. And you got to look for yours in the woods somewhere. And then you got to figure out what you're going to do. So you have a lot of time to process. I have a story about this too, actually. what you're going to do next. So you have to kind of keep yourself in some sort of Zen check, because you don't want to have anxiety about your shop while you're waiting for other people. You're trying to be a golf gentleman. You're trying to, you know, do your, you know, be a good teammate, look for their ball, do your thing. But then you have to zone in, and you got to figure out that 20 seconds you need to kind of do your pre-shot routine and what you need to do every single time to hit a good shot or play your best. So I think the difference is the time between action. It's just so, and you have to also be cordial to your playing partners. You're not like really playing against, you are maybe, but you're not showing you are. You want to be a gentleman, and it's a gentleman sport. So you're not kind of, you're not blocking somebody while they're hitting a shot or anything like that. So you got to sit there, wait, be patient. And then when it's your turn to hit, you do what you have to do to feel comfortable about it. There's a story in my book about you're entering your bubble and kind of figuring out what pre-shot your routine works for you. What do you want to visualize? What do you want to do? And a lot of amateur golfers don't know how to do that. They just hit and pray. You know, they're hitting and praying, and then they're getting frustrated, as opposed to, you know, you could deliberately visualize what you would like to do. Stand behind the ball. What do you hit this far? You have 150 yards. What club is that for you? Did you work on that at the range? You know, did you hit it in a simulator? Do you know your yardage is? Things like that to prep. And then, you know, before you hit that shot, to prep that with that pre-shot routine are paramount in not only performing well, but enjoying it, because at least you know you're putting your best foot forward. You know what I mean?
Oh, I do know 100% what you mean. I think the challenge for me, and probably what other people would experience, is that, and again, just specifically for me, like I'm still trying to make this jump of changing my mindset about the game, and, you know, kind of thinking about things like my think box and my play box, right? Where, like, I'm thinking about my shot and my process, and then when I get over the ball, I'm going, right? Like, I'm not trying to have a bunch of swing thoughts over it. I think the hardest part for people to understand is all that time in between, right? It's like you talk about those 10 minutes in between shots, and that's where your mind starts to wander. Like, it starts to wander about work. It starts to wander about life. It starts to wander about whatever conversation you're having with your playing partners. And as over the span of 4 hours, though, how do you manage that, right? Like, how do you manage the time that you're not actually going through the process or the actual playing part of the sport?
You have too much time even to check your phone. You're checking your phone. You're taking a call from your girl, your wife, your kids, or whatever the case is, your friends. Like, you have to compare. If you really want to play well, I notice when I really want to play well, I don't really drink a lot during the round. And I'm sort of, my phone's away. And I just put it in my, unless I want to take a picture. But a lot of times I notice a lot of these beautiful, like, I played Spanish Bay last summer for my friend's birthday, and I hardly have any pictures of it because I was focused on the round so much, you know. And I think you play a lot better when that happens. I think the distraction part is, it's up to you what you want to get out of your round. If you really want to improve, or if you're being competitive, or you're just slapping it around, it just depends. But if you really do want to improve, you know, there's a level of focus you need to do every, you know, you need to have when you actually play the game, you know what I mean, in practice. And that's a lot of my book is about, you know?
Yeah. So if you dive deeper into that, like what are examples of some of those things that people can do? Like, what do you talk about?
Well, that's a great question. So the book's called Let Go, Let Golf, Mindful Ways to Practice with Purpose. So basically, it started, like I said, with those unorthodox games, but then because it was written 10 years after the inception of it, and I started reading, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh and Alan Watts and a bunch of self-help gurus like, you know, Bruce Lee even, and Carolyn Mace and Wayne Dyer and even Marcus Aurelius and Stephen Pressfield, and all of those kind of lessons that they bring into their mindfulness trainings and their self-help books are all so easily applicable to the game. And so what happened was, it was sort of, the book became an amalgamation of those teachings with sort of Ben Hogan and Harvey Penick's teachings. So essentially, the pillars of it are practice with intention, you know, make the most out of your practice time, especially when you don't have a lot of it. You get an hour on the range a week. What can you do to improve in that time? You know, understand what aspects of the game you're working on and focus on them and work on them, just like you're going to the gym. The other thing would be focus on the present moment. You know, the key to enjoying the game and playing well is to be fully present, right? It's super simple. It's like a childlike state of engagement. You know, when a kid is playing with his toys, it's a whole nother world. It's like when you're painting or doing anything you love, which is what I came up with the idea of meditation in the form of recreation, sort of. So it can't just be, it doesn't have to be just applied to golf, which golf is a great, great metaphor for it, but it could be anything anybody enjoys, because it's hard for anybody to sit around and for 15 minutes and meditate, you know, in the middle of their busy day, right? So you find mindfulness and find a moment of Zen in something you enjoy. Then it's about obviously embracing the mental game, right? Mindfulness goes beyond physical mechanics. It's, you know, techniques like visualization and positive self-talk, improve your focus. Then it's about, you know, accepting imperfection, right? Letting go of the need for perfect shots and accepting the misses, knowing that you're going to miss, knowing that you're probably should, you know, practice recovery shots on the range before you get out there. You know, I hit a couple hooks, hit a couple, you know, little chips out of the rough or something like that, that you might need in the game, while you play. And then enjoy the journey, right? Focus on the process of getting better. Celebrate the small wins, find joy in the act of, you know, playing the game itself and being with your friends. So those are basically the main tenets. And every one of my stories kind of touches on a lesson, but they all touch on one of those pillars in a way. So I think a lot of golfers, it's really a book for people who love golf and want to get better, because a lot of times the plateau is mental. At this time, you know how to chip, you know how to hit, you have your swing dialed and you figured it out, but why can't you get past the score? Why can't you meet, you know, why can't you shoot? Why can't you break 70 or break 80 or whatever the case is? And the mental game is the difference, right? And it's also for people who love self-help books, that this is like self-help book through the lens of golf. And it's also for like former athletes that played other sports, because I know a lot of them and now they play golf and they're not great at it yet, but they're great athletes. So they figure it out pretty quickly, but it's written for those three pillars of people. You know what I mean? So I think it dovetails well with life because, right, we get distracted in life as well. And we do in our game, and there's kind of ways to rein it in, but in a way that's not cumbersome or annoying. It's more fun and enjoyable. You know?
Yeah. You've hit on just a touch of like, it feels like your book is also, you know, why we started this podcast, right? Which is to enjoy the game, to draw a lot of similarities between the game of golf and life, but also talk about, you know, getting better and kind of being on this journey with, you know, your friends or guests or whoever you talk to. And it's funny that you also bring up the, you know, ex-athletes who are now into golf, right? Because it's almost like there's this movement, even we see it on national TV, of all these ex-athletes that have caught the bug, or even current athletes, right? Like
100%.
Steph Curry, or like, yeah, obviously
Steph's
Michael Jordan.
Steph's
is one
a
of the,
stick, you know, he's a real stick though.
Yeah, but even like a, you know, a Michael Jordan who was so obsessed with it even while he was playing, and now he plays twice a day. And I think the interesting part is that, you know, anybody that has that kind of competitive itch, if you will, seems to get hooked on golf, right? Because it's the sport that you can't perfect,
right?
No matter
so true.
How hard you try. And I'd want to hear your thoughts on, like, when you talk to these ex-athletes when they get into golf, like, what are you hearing, and what's the thing that helps them get over the hump, right? Because they're all amazing athletes, and like you said, a lot of it has to do with mental and the mindset and how golf is so much different compared to, you know, any other sport.
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I think that it's always become down to the mental game for them, because they have the physical prowess. And what I've noticed about a lot of them too is when you teach them something, they pick it up like in 3 seconds, like hitting out of the sand, for instance, or whatever the case is. I remember I was playing with somebody who's playing NFL, and I was like, this is, so open your club face up, do this. And he was like, oh, okay. Hits a perfect. I was like, you know, man, you know, you're a linebacker. You play for USC, and he was a linebacker in the NFL, and he's a natural. He's a great athlete, and he could pick it up quickly. So what I notice about them is they're really coachable. They're very, very teachable. They're totally cool with listening to what could help them improve. That there's a humility there, where actually I really like, and I think that's something that every amateur should really, because we've all been immature about. Like, I know this and that, but they are very coachable, and they're also extremely physically talented, where they understand what you're saying conceptually, physically, immediately. So it's easy to teach them because they're listening, and they're also in touch with their bodies in a different way, because they're athletes. You know, their body has been their living for their whole lives. And also they love the competition, they love playing, and they like the idea that they're not good yet and they're going to get better, and they know they're going to get better. The key is intention. You got to know you're going to get better. You got to know it's going to get better, right? You got to know your life's going to get better, or tomorrow's going to be better, or I know next season I'll be a way better player than I am this season if I put the time in. A lot of my issues sometimes living in the East Coast is the time I put into the game. I wish I could play a lot more, because my handicap would be a lot lower if I could. And sometimes it doesn't move because I don't play as much some summers or whatever the case is. I'm traveling a lot, work's crazy. And I think that, you know, that's something I want to change actually, but that's the thing. These guys are just really, really open to learning, and they love the game. You know, they're playing it because they love it, and their friends love it. And obviously they want to win, and they're competitive. So it's fun to talk trash and to kind of be in that mix with people like that. Cause it just makes the game more fun, especially when you know they're 100 times a better athlete. I'm a pretty good athlete, but they play professional. They're the best of the best of the best of the best. in their state. You know what I mean? Like when you grew up in high school, these guys were the best player in the state, not just all county team, you know? And that's like a difference. And it's a, you see it, you know, and when they hit the ball too, it's just like, oh, okay. You know, that's a rip.
Yeah. You start to see the athlete come out.
Yeah, you do. It's
golf
fun. It's great.
Yeah. With like, I guess one of them, best example would be like Justin Morneau, if you know who that is, played baseball for the Minnesota Twins.
Baseball players just destroy the golf ball.
Yeah. So this is what I was going to say. Like he was, I think this is probably about a year, maybe even 2 years ago. And we went out and played. And I remember, you know, Jamie Rue, who's been on this podcast, told me like, you know, Justin's like really getting into golf. He's, you know, recently picked it up now that he's like early retired, has a little more time and all this stuff. We went out and played and I couldn't believe how good he was with it just, you know, relatively starting, right? Like I'm sure he's played golf throughout his life, but you know, when you have a professional, when you're a professional athlete, like of course you're not going to have as much time to play. And just the way that the ball sounded when he hit it too, right? Like you're like, oh man, like this guy that used to hit baseballs, you know, 450 feet or whatever is now hitting a golf ball. You're like, man, once he figures it out, he's going to be really good.
Right.
He's going to be really good.
Here's where you get them though. The short game. See, the short game, they're going to have to practice. They can wail like a rock. Because I hit the ball. I can crush the ball too. But they crush the ball, sure. But when you're around the green, that's the difference. You know, that's the stuff that anybody's going to have to practice. Because it's hard to have touch. You got to kind of figure out what clubs to use and how to angle your club and how to pitch it and what shot to hit. Do you hit it low? Do you hit it high? Do you want to hit a little spinny shot? Do you want to flop it? So those are the things that anybody, no matter who they are, where they played, have to learn through time in the dirt. I talk about this game is like my book is your mental time in the dirt. That's what I call it. So like anybody who wants to play better golf, it's a fun read. And it's like, you can read these short story snippets and get something out of it and then go, oh, and then what I want to do is build a community ultimately that kind of with people coming up with other ideas of unorthodox ways to practice. You know what I mean? You know, chip into your kid's Nerf hoop or, you know, go in your backyard and, chip a wiffle ball at your dog and whatever the case is, like something that keeps you fun.
Yeah, they can practice fun.
Right. You practice fun. And also what ends up happening is, so I say this also, when you go to the range, take every club in the bag and hit it towards the 100 flag. Chip with your 5-wood to the 100 flag. When you start getting Tommy Fleetwood, I just saw this Instagram video of him just doing the 3-quarter swing, how he practices. And when you practice that, everything else becomes easy because you're practicing impact zone and you're practicing, you know, where your angles are and how your grip is and how you're coming through the ball. And if that's going well, then you can elongate your swing and it's probably going to translate. So, you know, there's all these little drills you can do that are really simple that you don't even need. The point of my book too is there's no tools involved. There's no weird little toys. You don't need anything. You just need your clubs and a ball in your mind. Just figure it out from there. And you can just kind of figure out a way to understand what works for you because everything's different for everybody. Everybody has a different body type, different athletic ability, different strength, different understanding of what they can do. So I think that golf is an interesting metaphor for life in that regard too. You understand what your strengths and weaknesses are, you know, and you play toward them. You know, if you don't hit the ball long, you rely on your short game. If you do hit the ball long, you might be able to get away with a bad putting. Like Johnny Miller said it perfectly. You can win with a bad putter, but you can't win with a bad driver. I always love that statement because it's so true. If you're not driving the ball well, your day's going to be long.
Yeah, I saw somebody, these guys that I follow on Instagram say, I don't want to butcher it. I don't want the internet coming after me, but it was something along the lines of, you know, between the two best putters on the PGA Tour, between the best putter and the worst putter on the PGA Tour, the difference in stroke gain was like less than 1 stroke gain. And then the difference between the best driver and the worst driver was more than 5 strokes gained.
Exactly the quote.
Which and all to say too, like Scottie Scheffler, right? Number one golfer in the world by far.
He's pretty good.
Is not that great of a putter. He's not that great of a putter. Like his strokes gained putting are, I want to say like average compared to the rest of the tour, right? But it goes to show, how awesome, you know, driving and ball striking is. And that's what sets them apart.
Yeah. I mean, look, you're going to gain more strokes through driving the ball. It's the most important, really. It's really most important club in your bag. People often want to use 3-wood. They think it's safer, but it really isn't. You might as well learn how to hit your driver. And that's another thing that I talk about a little bit too. It's just, you just go for what you can. Like, you know, and also work with what you got during the day. Sometimes you're going to get out there and you're going to hit a big slice and maybe you can't get rid of that day. So start aiming left, you know, start, or if you're a right-hander, that is, right? Things like that. Don't fight what you're doing, you know? So I think that, you know, golf is so complicated in so many ways. The best thing to do is simplify it first for yourself. I think it intimidates a lot of people. And I think that's why they get discouraged with it so quickly. And I think the whole idea is just to kind of take it in chunks and simplify it for yourself so you can understand, you know, a little bit more about the game and what you need to do to get better at it, you know, because everybody has something different that they can work on, obviously.
Well, and so what's this concept? You know, obviously, when I was doing some research on this, I came across it a couple times of go analog when everybody else is going digital.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I need to delve into that for a minute.
Yeah, well, you know what it is? Yeah, like zig when everybody zags kind of thing. Well, it's about getting back to nature. It's like golf, you have 5 hours in nature, right? It's about, everybody's on their phones, everybody's on their tablets, everybody's on the computer, everybody's scrolling news feeds, especially this week, right? Everybody's on social media constantly. We've been taken over by a digital world, right? So, and we all are guilty of it. We constantly are on our phones. We look at your screen time every Sunday when it pops up. It tells you how many hours you're on the phone every week. And I think that, you know, going analog when everybody goes digital is sort of what I want to talk about, because I think that human beings were more, we were born to look at trees and lakes and rivers and greenery as opposed to granite and opposed to, you know, our office cubicles or chairs or office, you know, buildings, et cetera. So I kind of love the idea of going back to the original, going back to nature, finding mental health and what our ancestors did 400,000 years ago, right? Get out of your head, out of your phone, out of your inbox and live in the fresh air kind of thing. You know, go to the water, let your eyes see greenery. It's more powerful than we know. I think it does a lot for our psyche. And I think if we stop and smell the roses, which is one of the stories of my book, during our round, I think it's another way to not only enjoy the game, but enjoy your life while you're playing the game, right? It's like, it's about living with intention and enjoying the game in different ways, as opposed to just, yeah, I shot 78, super psyched. But man, if I picked some fresh lavender and kind of looked at the ocean in Monterey and took the car over to the side for 15, 20 minutes and ate our sandwich, we kind of enjoyed the whole experience without having to feel rushed or without having to feel stressed. It's so much more fun of a round, you know? So that's kind of what I'm advocating for, you know, being out in nature and enjoying your life and using that time as an escape.
Well, and you talk about some of the, maybe point me in the direction of some of these mind hacks to be able to do that. Because I think, you know, conceptually in golf, one of the things that I overwhelm myself with is, you know, there are so many things that you can focus on. Right. You know, whether it's like practice, technique, or even some stuff like this where you're like, hey, today I'm not going to look at my phone, or like, hey, today I'm going to have, you know, these three or four goals, or it's going to be like, be more present, or like, be appreciative that I'm even out here with the ability to play golf outside on a Wednesday afternoon or whatever it might be. But to be able to do that consistently, time over time, round over round, I think that's where it really becomes difficult. And so like, how do you train your body and mind out of those old habits and get into these new ones and start to leverage some of these, you know, call it like a mind hack, right? To trick your brain into going into that different mode, you know, where you're going to appreciate it more and ultimately play better golf.
Yeah,
like, how do you do that?
You know what? Every day is a work in progress. You know, you do it by, there's a bunch of ideas I have, and there's a lot of ways you can do it. But the one way to do it is you have to practice it. Figure out what works for you and go practice it, because you're not just going to do it every day just because you read a page in a book. You're going to have to go to the range, practice your pre-shot routine, practice what your swing thoughts are, understand what you want to do. It's really just about sort of, like I said, meditation in the form of recreation, figuring out a way to find your zen in those moments. And it could be different for everybody, but it could be, you know, picking lavender off the tree when you're and doing aromatherapy for yourself while you're playing. It could be making sure you have the right snacks with you, because sometimes your blood sugar low. You don't realize you're not playing well, and you don't realize you haven't eaten the banana and drank the Gatorade you had in your cart for 3 hours. Like sometimes that happens. You go, why am I keep pushing my driver? And you're like, my blood sugar's low. I'm not even thinking correctly. You know, things like that. Just being mindful of yourself, your body, and the devil's in the details. Like, and the equipment you're using, what skill level you have. So all of those things factor in. So there's not exactly one hack, but there's ideas. I give plenty of them in the book where you have to just practice them. What works for you? Some of them might resonate with you and some of them might not, but I think it's about repetition, understanding what works for you, and then being able to bring it onto the playing, when you're playing, bring it onto the course and being able to effectively apply it. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I 100% know what you mean. Like, again, like the hard part for me is the practicing and doing it. I feel like I can go, you know, a couple of weeks or even maybe like a solid month of doing these things that I practice, and then all of a sudden you go a whole month where you don't do it, and then you look back in hindsight and you go, I completely forgot all this stuff that I had like worked on or really like made a conscious effort to, and you kind of go back to those old habits, right? So I mean, that's the—
Well, here's a hack.
I mean, that's with anything in life, right?
But, correct. That's exactly right. But here's the thing. This is where I would cut through that. So this is what you do. What shots do you need to score, right? You need, hit your wedges. Go to the range and hit your wedges. Just hit wedges. Like, I see so many people on range hitting off mats, number one, which I'm completely against, and hitting their brand new driver that they bought for $700, which they should have just bought a used wedge, because your 100-yard shots are way more important. So it's about really, like, you cut through a lot of that red mental tape clutter through maybe practicing what's important to score. What's going to make you feel better out there? Is it going to make you feel better to hit a good drive? Practice that. If it's going to make you feel better to score better, practice those scoring. Practice your chipping. Practice your putting. And practice your wedges. Anything from 120 and in is going to be paramount importance, because so many times you hit a beautiful drive. How many times you hit a great drive and then just completely shanked your second shot? And we're like, man, I cannot believe I just bombed my drive. And now I got to see if I can find my ball out of the water over there on the left. I can't believe I just did this. So those shots are the most frustrating, right? Because when you have yourself set up for success and then you don't do it right, that's mental. That's also like, how come I hit this so perfectly on the range, but I can't do it here? The key is to bring your range game to the game, right? To your actual real game, or when you're competing with your friends or whatever the case is. And I think that one of the ways to do it is just practice the shots you need to score. Like, practice those shots, which I feel is like, practice your wedges, practice your short irons. You know, the things you're going to need to, when you're aiming toward a green or a flag and you want to hit a spot, you know, be as consistent as possible in hitting that spot. And I think that's what people should be practicing, you know?
Yeah, I've been doing this, you know, over the last 2 weeks. I just started it, but I call it they're 2-hour Tuesdays, where I post my 2-hour practice session from the week, and I just post it every Tuesday. But my my primary goal of the 2-hour practice sessions is that, you know, an hour and a half of it is spent inside probably 150 yards, like pitching, wedge, and down, you know, which is full shots from 100 to 150, but then also wedge shots and kind of pitch shots, chipping, and then putting, right? I mean, that's where most of the game, especially when you start to, you know, get to that level where you are breaking 80, breaking 70, you know, wherever people are at, you figure out pretty quickly that's where your strokes gained are won and lost right there. Like, if you're consistently breaking 80, you're clearly a player that's figured out how to keep the ball in play off the tee.
That's correct.
Right. That's how most people start to break 80. They're no longer losing balls off the tee. And unless you're playing, you know, from the tips or championship style courses, at most places, after you hit a drive, you're probably not hitting 4-iron in. Nope. Onto a par 4. You're hitting probably a 9-iron or less. Correct. In most courses.
At a Muni, yes, that's what you're doing.
Yeah, and so that's where I've started to structure my practice a little different. And so I'm, you know, on one side of the coin, I'm super excited. On the other, I just started it in this November, so I got like 4 months to be able to do this. So I'm itching to see what it'll actually translate to when I actually have a full season, but I'm going to have to wait a little bit.
Yeah, I understand. The winter, man. The thing is too, it's also like practice at home then, you know, if you're in a winter, we're in winter states, right? Winter areas of the country. You know, if you can't go outside and play, find an area that you're not going to bash your TV in and chip around and figure out like little games you can play. I have a little net in my place here and I just kind of, you know, I chip into it all the time or whatever the case is, just to keep my rhythm and my tempo down and stuff like that. And I think that's part of it as well. How do you figure out a way to play all year round if the weather doesn't permit? And I think that's key too. Just even, I think Ben Hogan always said, swing, at least take 100 swings a day. You know, like if you just swing without a ball, really helps a lot. You know, I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to Florida in 2 weeks, so I'm going to be doing a lot of that soon. Like just kind of just getting my rhythm back and taking all my clubs out and hitting it, you know, off my rug and this and that. So, or try to go to a range, obviously, but you know, I think the consistency is, don't let the weather also dictate what you can do during. If you love the game and you want to improve, you could prove all year round. Just figure out how to do it inside, you know. I think the consistency.
Yeah, people really underestimate the power of, you know, two things that you can always do inside, right? Like a 6-foot putting mat and like one of those little $20 mirrors. I mean, you could probably get that for $100 or less nowadays. And you're practicing your 3 and 6 foot putts, right? Like your setup, putt, stroke, like good. You can do that 100 times a day and probably only spend 10, 15 minutes doing it. But then the other, I think that people really underestimate is like your motor skill function. Like when you talk to really elite instructors, all the guys that I see, and even the guys that instruct at the PGA Tour level, every single one of them will tell you the easiest way to change is practice at a very slow speed and very exaggerated, yeah. Right? And so like, if you're a guy that, you know, slices the ball and you get to the top and you do this motion where you go over, practice really slowly getting to the top and then like coming down behind you, right? And from staying the inside and like really feeling it very slow.
Yep.
And Rory is now coming out saying that he spent the last 3 weeks just hitting like balls into a white screen, not even looking at his trajectory to change his swing. This is all he was doing, was kind of like getting those new feels, and everybody can do that at their house. Yeah, he is changing his swing.
Well, he must not, I mean, well, he hasn't won a major in quite a while, so I can understand why he's trying to do, you know, he hasn't really performed that well in them either, which he, it doesn't make any sense with his talent and how awesome he is. So, you know, I think...
Well, see, I would say it's the opposite. I think his talent is what's gotten him to this level and why he won really early on. But, you know, if I were to have a thesis on this, the sport of golf right now is as competitive as it's ever been.
100%.
I mean, you are seeing college kids come up and win tournaments. You're seeing amateurs win tournaments. You're seeing 17-year-old kids play on the PGA Tour. And so my argument to that would be Rory's talent has gotten him this far. And if he wants to start winning majors and be at that level, you know, he's talking about, he's probably at his level talking about changes that are going to get his dispersion down a few feet, right? Like literally hitting a 7-iron to 22 feet instead of 26 feet. Now he's going to make a few more putts over the span of however many tournaments, and he's going to lower his averages, find one more stroke around, and that's the difference between winning the U.S. Open or not. So, I mean, you know, I don't know if he's completely overhauling it, but he's talking about little changes that, you know, hopefully pay dividends.
For me, I think to add on to what you're saying, I don't disagree. I think it's mental, though. I think talent got everybody to where they are to be in the PGA Tour. But he and you can't tell me he puts less work in than the other guys do. So what's the difference? The difference is really going to be it's the mental game. Scotty Scheffler's in such a place right now. Like, you can't compare anybody to where Tiger was in the early 2000s. But Tiger, if you go there, that's a perfect example of the epitome of it. He was so mentally on another level than anybody. It's like how Mike Tyson was in his prime. You were beaten before he even stepped in the ring. You just knew. And so I think it's mental with Rory more than anything, if you really want to know the truth. And that's like what I preach. It's the mental games. It's like not everybody's going to be a scratch golfer, but everybody can enjoy the game. That's the key here. You know what I mean? And so the key here is to find a way to enjoy it and play it more. You know, grow the game, enjoy it more, you know, evangelize it to other people that like it. I think Rory, yeah, speaking to him, I think it's mental. I think it's a lot of, you know, when you spend 9-10 years not winning a major, sometimes to break through that again is almost like doing it the first time. So,
yeah. And maybe to him mentally, he thinks he has to change something, right? But maybe he's just, you know, he's going to feel like he's changing something. And maybe that'll be the thing that gets him over the hump. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, especially, you know, he's at the tail end of his career. He's probably got a few years left to really go out and win a couple majors and win, obviously, at Augusta. Yep. He really wants to do that. And so I've never been a massive Rory guy, but yeah, that's what he needs. He needs the green jacket.
And Jordan Spieth needs the PGA.
That sounds right. I think Spieth's going through an injury. I think he's, you know, I think a lot of these guys that came up kind of in the post Tiger era, you know, that are starting to get a little bit older, we're starting to see some of the, you know, maybe stuff that made them great kind of be their hindrance, you know. You know, they're starting to go through their time in their career, or maybe they're getting a little bit more injured. They're starting to have, you know, kids and get married and go through different phases of life where now the mental game, you know, really adds on to what's going on at home and at the golf course. And so it's, you know, it's going to be an interesting couple of years to see one who comes up, but then, you know, again, how some of those older guys, start to manage, you know, being on the tour, and they're probably not used to not winning a lot. I can't remember the last time I saw Spieth win a tournament. Well, it hasn't been that many times over the last few years.
If you really want to know the truth, like I can remember that. But he won in Texas. He won in Austin. I think the I forget. He won the tournament in Austin 2 years ago. That was last
night. Yeah. So I can't imagine for them it's very, very easy, right? When you go from winning a bunch and having all that success to like, wow, I gotta change something. I gotta do something.
Well, the guys are better and they have more competition now. But you know, I have faith in a guy like Jordan Spieth. I have a lot of faith in because he is when he gets hot, his putter is amazing. He's just awesome. He's great. Every aspect of the game is pretty good. He struggles with his driving, I think, is part of his issue sometimes. So I think JT too. JT's won a couple majors and you're all buddies. And you know, he hasn't won in a while either. He struggled last year. And I love watching JT swing though. I follow him on Instagram and I just like how steep he takes the club back. Cause a lot of times I shallow out, right? Like when I get tired or I get into old habits, I used to be a pull hitter in baseball and I used to always hit draws, right? And when I started playing golf, my grandfather taught me, I was always hitting that hook draw, like trap draw left and right. And I would hit bombs and they would just, you know, roll for days. And then I realized I can't really, you know, I hit a lot of balls out of bounds doing this. It might go a mile, but it's not controlling anything. But, you know, the reality is that the tendencies of, I lost my train of thought there, but the tendencies that somebody has when they play are sort of what you have to go with. Sometimes it's hard to like come out of your tendencies. Sometimes you have these habits of hooking the ball and it's just natural from when you started to play. And that's sometimes what I feel like pros go through and we go through too. We go through those moments of like, I have to fight my actual tendency. So I tend to shallow out when I'm getting lazy or when I haven't played in a while, then I start hooking the ball again. I'm like, how come I'm doing this? And then that's what sort of practicing and being a little more mindful about it comes into play. You kind of go, oh wait, this is what I'm trying to do. And you kind of plot out when you're looking at your shot, where you want to go with it and how you want to get there. And I think that's a big difference with amateurs and pros. Like you don't have to break it down that granularly if you're an amateur, but it's good to visualize your shot going in left to right or right to left when you're actually playing. You know, so you have an idea of where your ball flight is going to go and what you want to do as opposed to just hitting and praying for it, you know, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it definitely makes sense. And we were, I think where you had lost your train of thought is because probably you were thinking about how good of a wedge player JT is. I think he's still one of the best on tour. I think everything else is probably lacking a little bit, but he's still one of the best from inside 100 yards. I mean, he is so good with his wedges. It is so fun to watch.
Yeah, he's great.
That guy throw darts into flags.
And I was talking about how steep he comes back. So I always watch him because I love his swing because he comes back in a nice steep way and his angles are like spot on. And I try to emulate that a little bit more. So sometimes like when I come back shallow, so because when you look at like a guy like Matt Kuchar is really flat when he comes in, takes the club back. If you look at the difference in their swings, and sometimes I think that's my bugaboo. So I think a lot of this stuff is like, I say in one of my stories too, it's like, know thyself. If you have to, that's why golf is such a correlation with life, because the better you know yourself and your tendencies, the better you're going to play, because you can play toward your strengths. You know what I mean? If you know you're a good writer, you're going to write a lot. You'll formulate an email. You're okay doing a newsletter or a memo or something like that. If you're not a good writer and you rather speak it, you're going to speak more. So it's the same thing as if you're a long hitter or you're a great putter, you're going to play toward those strengths. And I think that's like the key to getting better at golf and life. Like, what are you here to do? What are you good at? And what can you, you know, improve upon? And what can you accentuate that you already are talented at, type of thing? So that's sort of like the whole, one of the parts of the metaphor, that and the fact that you should really just enjoy it because we're only here a finite amount of time and there's no use being stressful. If I stress about something that's supposed to be fun and you spent $2 on anyway, right? You spent $2 to play this course. It's not crazy, but say you spent $400 to play a course. Are you gonna bitch and moan during that day? You might as well not, you know?
Yeah, you may as well have fun with
you
it.
Might as well,
I'm we're recording this on a Saturday afternoon. I can tell you've convinced me, and I probably should have read it beforehand, and I'm going to go download the ebook and I'm going to go listen to it while I work out. What are some of the takeaways you would like me to have when I listen, and then also for the listeners who hopefully go and read it as well? I mean, a lot of people that listen to the podcast are looking for those nuggets to try and get better, and we're all very committed to the mental game, I feel like. So for myself and the listeners who will eventually read your book, what are some of the takeaways we need to have?
Yeah, that's great. But let go, let golf can be applied to many other activities, right? I can write a whole series of let go, let mountain climbing, let go, let biking, right? It's about meditation, the form of recreation. You know, people don't think of meditation this exact way. This book makes mental health more accessible through doing activities that you already love. So my takeaway is do something you love, find mental health in it, and also improve your game at the same time. So there's all benefits to it. You know, like when you're in love with an activity and you're in that state of painting or sewing or climbing or biking, swimming, golfing, right? Playing tennis. You're in that flow, that meditation flow. And everybody knows what that is that's listening. They understand, you know, when you just lose track of time. And a lot of times when you get into that place, you're practicing golf, you're in the same place. You just forget where you are. And you're all of a sudden it's 2 hours and you're late for dinner or whatever the case is. And that's a great place to be because you realize, wow, I put a lot of time and mental time in there. It got some muscle memory down. And I've enjoyed every minute of it because I didn't even count the minutes. It was fun to do. And so when you have fun practicing, I think it's the biggest difference. And it also helps your other parts of your life. You know, you can apply it to, you know, work. You can apply it to how you parent, you know. And what if you can use those beta waves for your own benefit in life, right? While you improve at a craft. So that's kind of the main takeaway, you know, improve your life, improve your craft and get become a better golfer in this at the same time. So I think it's very beneficial.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, if you promised me all three of those things of improving my life, my craft and my golf game, I'd probably give you $400.
Yeah, that's funny. I'll take it. No, I can't promise you that. It's all comes down to how much effort you want to put into the practice. The only thing I can do is like give you an idea. I gave a bunch of ideas. I gave you an idea and I'm sure you'll implement them, but it's about, you know, how much you want to apply that to your life and how much you believe in yourself and how much you really want to get better, how much time you want to put into it, obviously. So that's, you know, I think that in this world, like I said, with all the distractions we have with digital and the screen time we all partake in and all the distractions we have, I think it's important to go back to nature. And golf is just a perfect way to do that. You know, it's an easy way. You can just walk around a park for, you know, perfectly manicured field for 5 hours and enjoy that and enjoy your game and just and enjoy other aspects of your life too. You know, so that's what I think is so beautiful about the game. And it's also about staying present. So you can use that time to decompress. You might have had a bad week or a bad month or a bad year or whatever the case is. You might be upset about something, but use the time to compartmentalize your life and find enjoyment out of it. And I guarantee you, you'll take it home with you, you know?
Yeah, it's a conversation I've had with my fiance and friends and everybody alike. And I think, you know, people that are generally, you know, members at clubs or who have, you know, committed to golf being a hobby, they'll all tell you the same thing, which is like a lot of the time it's their unwind time. It's their time to go and do something that takes them away from whatever's going on at work or at home or just in life in general. And you can learn a lot from and about somebody four and a half hours on a golf course, and you can teach yourself a lot of things about yourself over four and a half hours on
absolutely
a golf course. You know, the highs and lows that you go through when you make back-to-back birdies and then you follow it up with two triple bogey, right? Like, how are you going to respond? How are you going to take it? What was it like when you were high? What was it like when you were low? There's so many things about the sport that translate into life. And I'm excited to read the book and see what things I can take away for my game and my mindfulness. And I really appreciate you coming on and talking about it.
I appreciate you having me. And I, you know, I talk about being stoic when you're golfing, and that's like sort of a good takeaway. There's a stoic story in the book too. And I think that the main takeaway is just to have fun and enjoy life. It's really about perspective and the way you perceive the world. You know, you have two choices: learn and grow, move forward, or dwell and stand still, which is going backward, right? So everybody wants to move forward. And that's the takeaway, like move forward with intention and enjoyment and, you know, bring it to other aspects of your life and have fun playing golf.
Yeah. Well, it's a great life lesson. It's a great lesson for all of our listeners out there. And again, truly appreciate you coming on and making some time. And I'm going to go listen to the book right now.
I appreciate that, man. Thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
All right. Be well.